So the wavelengths used for UV visible are either going to be in the ultraviolet end of the spectrum, 180 up to 380 nanometers, or in the visible end, which is 380 through to 780. So we recall the little mnemonic from school, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. So the violet end is down this end at 380, so that anything less than that is then ultraviolet. And the infrared end is sitting up here, so our long wavelength is the red end. For the infrared, that's now saying that it's beyond the red, so that's moving further into the nanometers. Now, past this, we're clearly going to get to 1,000 nanometers, moves into the micrometer range. So for infrared, it's 2.5 micrometers, or through to 25 microns. Once we're working from 2.5 to 25, we're ending up with like 2.7s and 2.9s and 3.2s. This is inconvenient for a chemist. So a chemist then says, let's get a better scale. So we switch scales and we switch to the wave number scale. And the convenient unit then is the reciprocal centimetre. That's what's going to be used. Now, I've tried to teach this quite a few times in 10, 12, and nobody ever really got it. So after a while, I just gave in and said, okay, well, it's just a scale. If you can't get it, who cares? Just accept that it's a scale. So that's what it is. It's simply a scale which gives you integer numbers. That's what we want. So when we're dealing with UV visible, we've got integer scales. It's an absorption of 182 nanometers. When we move to infrared then, you've got an absorption at 3,050 reciprocal centimetres. No, it hasn't been an exact match. Okay, so you're thinking of your bond vibrating, for instance, in infrared. Okay, so as you're scanning through, this particular vibration here, it needs a wavelength of 3,050. As it goes down 3,051, there's no match. It hits 3,050, bang, it starts vibrating. And then moves to 349, bang, it stops vibrating immediately. It has to be an absolute exact match. Yes, it's picking up which particular, it's getting an absorption when it starts picking that process up. So, to use this, we need the relationship between the intensity and the concentration. So the first thing we do is we determine our absorption of interest. So in 10-12, we looked at chromate and dichromate, and we picked a characteristic wavelength for our dichromate, where the chromate didn't absorb. Again, Josie, you'll remember that very well. Once you've got your analytical wavelength selected, so all you were doing there, you were trying to figure out where your analyte absorbed a wavelength, and there was no interference of anything else. That's the key. After that, you can then use Beer's law. So you plot, as we've done many times now, our calibration curve, where we relate a set of known concentrations, in this case I is our analyte concentration, through to the intensity of the absorption here, and we use our path length, which invariably is 1 centimetre, and the epsilon, which is a molar absorption coefficient. So examples then, we've used UV visible for phosphate. For you guys then, it has been a sort of a total phosphate that you've been doing. It's used for nitrate and water quality work, same thing. So when we go to the Cairns Water Lab, we'll see them doing total nitrogen, total phosphorus analyses. Infrared, mainly used in air quality control work, although there's lots of other environmental things. So what I do up at Cape Trib then uses infrared to determine water and carbon dioxide. It's now a very standard technique. Same principle of operation as what we're going